Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of the Star Wars Report / Wampa's Lair podcast. I am your host, one of the many tonight, Carl LeClaire, and I am joined by a wonderful cast and crew. We've got from the Star Wars port, Riley and Bethany Blanton.
Woohoo!
Hey, man.
Hey!
You're forgetting the third wheel from the Star Wars report, though.
And also, beyond the films, it's Mark Herleman.
Yeah, I'm like three legs of a tripod.
Oh, and I can't fly without the poe to my fin. It's Jason Hunt.
Of course, I'm right here. Hi.
Oh, boy. Guys, I want to talk trailer with all of you.
Also, can we point out how awesome that Rey theme is? I just want to point that out, too.
Oh, the Rey theme is such a great piece of music. Have you guys watched the trailer by any chance?
I've been watching it religiously.
Nope, not at all.
What trailer?
Well,
yeah,
Bethany, all right, let's cut the crap, all right? Let's get serious, okay? This trailer, because we've all kind of had our initial reactions, but the big thing I think that makes this trailer unique, all right, that this is a new territory for Star Wars fans, because we had the director of the film initially, before Disney PR got involved, say, hey, if you don't want any spoilers, if you don't want to know anything about the movie, don't watch it. To which people might say, yeah, but then everybody already knows that. That's redundant. No, it's not redundant, because it's the first time a director has ever said it.
Yeah.
And this trailer shows off a lot. But just seriously, also, Carl, thanks for organizing this shenanigans for the Wampa Slayer Star Wars Report. Appreciate it, man.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, Jason and I had a great time talking about it, but I was like, I really want to get, like, some other opinions. And who better to go to than our brothers and sisters from the network, you know, the Second Airborne Division, Star Wars Report. We are a strong network, Riley. You built a strong foundation, and I want to fly high.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, sir. Couldn't do it without you guys.
But
shucks.
No.
Getting me all weepy over here.
I feel excited just because I get to represent three shows. I got the Padawan's perspective, Beyond the Films, and the Star Wars Report. I mean, I got to lift some weight over here.
Yeah, Mark, I expect a lot from you today. No shirking over there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've got notes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, so, he's bringing in the guns.
Then give us some notes, Mark. Well, okay. Oh, you guys saw the AT-ATs in the background at the beginning, right?
Oh, like, definitely.
Oh my gosh! Like, I've heard people speculating that the AT-AT is the new Scout Walker of the First Order, and I'm like, oh, Snoke, brilliant move.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know. There's so many things to digest here.
But I think there's some Scout Walker lookalikes in the hangar.
There's some walking around. Well. So
we got some chicken walkers. We got basically this lead up to whatever this big battle on Crait is. It's going to be sort of the big battle of the film. And I think, like another Star Wars film, here we go, guys. The comparisons start. like Empire, I don't think this is going to be the end battle of the film. I think it's going to be the land battle is going to be in the beginning or middle act.
Well, I wasn't thinking Crait was going to be the big battle. I felt like the space was going to be what pulls us in.
You know, actually,
what do you think it's going to be pulled?
Can I? I'm going to interject real quick, not to be rude. ding, ding, Carl's turn. You know, as I've watched this more and more, I really think the space battle is the start of the film. I also just bought the 6-inch Black Series Kylo figure. Basically, in light of this trailer, I'm like, okay, I need more Kylo in my life. So I went and picked it up, and you know how they always have like these little narratives on the back of the boxes? And forgive me if you've already seen this, but I hadn't obviously read it because I didn't have the figure, but it talks about how he's trying to prove himself to Snoke after his failure on Starkiller Base. I really feel like the start of this movie is going to be Kylo taking a fleet of First Order ships to oh my God, I'm always blanking. What's the planet that the Resistance is on in The Force Awakens?
It's in the Ilenium system.
Yes.
I forget the name.
I can't remember the name of the planet either.
I always forget it too, yeah.
But so I think the film's going to open with him leading that attack, and that stuff with him and Leia, I think, is the top of the film. That's why he's got the space Band-Aid on, right? Like, he doesn't have that on in the rest of the film. I mean, he's probably healed enough to not need the space Band-Aid. So I really feel like that's the top of the film. I think he's going to disable his mothership. He's obviously not going to kill Leia at the start. I think Krayt is later on in the film, and obviously she's not killed. But I really feel like the space battle is going to open the film. That's my take, anyway.
I like it. I like that. Because that I don't think that shot – because this kind of goes back to my opening remarks on Rian Johnson's tweet. I don't think there are a couple specific big OMG moments and, like, really literally saying, oh, he might kill Leia. I think the fact that they would not do that if that's actually where it happens, because you just don't telegraph something that big. So I'm sure it's like like he tries, right, but fails.
You will try.
Well, perfect manipulation, though. I mean, you think about the Legends aspect. It immediately you think about the aspect of Jason Solo taking the Anakin Solo, the Star Destroyer, firing it on the Millennium Falcon to kill his father and his mother. I mean, I immediately thought of that when they brought that scene up, and it wasn't until I watched it again that I was like, okay, yeah, the people in the background with Leia, they're not moving like they're in battle right now. Like, so you always got to keep in mind, you got to take this all out of perspective, because they're definitely not showing us what they want to show us. And if you take anything from Rogue One into consideration, oh my god!
Who is unboxing the raisinettes?
Those are top cards.
I'm guessing that's fess up, somebody. Sorry, audio snob just came in. or playing Yahtzee. One of the two.
If somebody's playing Yahtzee now, it's time to stop.
Sorry, you were saying, Mark.
Oh, I was just that. Like, I immediately thought of all those moments from, I think it was from Legacy of the Force or Fate of the Jedi, when Jason Solo went to the dark side and he did that to his parents. So you immediately think about, well, they're leading you down that trail on purpose. And then think about Rogue One and the fact that almost half of everything we saw leading up to the film wasn't even in the film.
I think there weren't nearly as the extensive reshoots for Last Jedi as there were for Rogue One.
And here's the difference. Most
of what we're seeing in this trailer is going to be in there.
Exactly, Jason, because this trailer has come out after they've locked the picture. The picture is locked, unless they're just lying to us. They have put it out there that the picture is locked. They're just in the final stages of post-production and, you know, the music, etc. But I think that this is a much better representation. But here's the other moment I just want to jump straight to. I have to comment on the final scene, because I think we can go through and break down point by point. There have been so many great breakdowns, but man, seeing Rey saying, you know, like, yo, so what is my place in all this? You know, it's the question we've all asked ourselves as teenagers. But across the way is not Luke Skywalker, but Kylo Ren. And I think
that's a red herring.
No way. Yeah, and I keep hearing this so much, but I, like, why do you tease that if it's not a thing?
I think the scene that they show us at the end is a red herring. I think the situation is probably still going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen the way that they're showing it, because I think the shot with her is her talking to Luke, because the ambience and everything seems more like that cave on Octo.
Not to mention her Force Awakens outfit she's wearing, as opposed to her Last Jedi outfit that she'll probably change into eventually.
Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Abrams. Change of wardrobe.
So here's the difference between the Force Awakens. Everyone talks about how similar it is to A New Hope. It is in a lot of ways, but the big difference is the mentor figure. It totally departs from the standard hero with a thousand faces format, because the mentorship, theme motif that we see in so many of these fantasy films is a broken version. You basically got a rejected Han Solo. There's nowhere else in the galaxy left for him to swindle. He's at the end of his rope, and he just does the best he can. Whereas, like, Obi-Wan with Luke in A New Hope has been just preparing for this for 20 years, and he's ready. He knows exactly what to do, exactly what his place is, and performs it perfectly. So that's the difference. Now that carries us to this film, where it looks like she's getting another broken mentor. It's not going to be like, you should go with me to the Alderaan system. I've prepared for this for 20 years. No, it's like, you know, I've seen this kind of power before. It didn't scare me enough then. It does now. And so I think that theme is getting furthered with Luke. I think that's going to be the big difference between something like this and Empire, is that Rey's going to kind of have to find her own path, and it might not be quite as you know, clean, I guess, as Luke's in some ways.
So no one's seeing the dark turn that I'm seeing here?
What's that?
You're saying full on dark, Mark.
Luke's going to turn on Rey. They're going to have a fight. He says that to her. She climbs out of the water and he's on the other side. Like, something goes down. He caves to his fear. Mm. Oh, it's going to be there.
Go ahead, Bethany.
I think Mark has a point here, because you see in the trailer that Luke's genuine fear. You see his reluctance in the first film. We all know that he doesn't want to be found. And I think at some point he's going to make a mistake with Rey. And I think that that may lead her to leave him, at least temporarily. And the only other Force user that she knows, period, is Kylo. And Kylo may have grown powerful enough to be convincing to her, to be seductive, not in the sense of like, ooh, let's go get married, but in the sense of like power. Because Rey has tapped into this enormous level of power. She's gone through grief and pain. And if Luke breaks her trust, she might be tempted to turn to Kylo if he can convince her that there was some other reason that he killed Han, that Snoke made him do it, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And going sort of along that, I think Luke and Rey will have some sort of confrontation. I don't think he's going to go full on dark and like betray her, but I think they're going to have some sort of confrontation, and there's going to be a separation, and either she's going to come back to him or he's going to go after her. However, the voiceover that we get with Kylo, where he's talking about, you know, overcoming the past and killing the past and that sort of thing. I forget the exact quote.
Kill it if you have to. Yeah,
exactly. That one. I'm wondering if he's telling that to Rey and not himself.
Mm.
So, referencing the still nebulous family that she was waiting for?
Possibly. Well,
I can think see about that. The I don't fact know. We still don't know about Snoke's background. I mean, that people assume he's a Sith. He could be something else, and we could see Kylo do the whole, you know, together we can turn on him angle.
Yeah. There's a lot of... Here's the thing. Like, the conversation we've had so far is indicative of the kind of trailer they've released, and I love that. Like, because mm-hmm. For me, when all you have to do is just look right now at what the reaction is in the fan community on all the podcasts and on Twitter, and it's all questions like, what about Rey, and how is she going to relate to Luke? How is she going to relate to Kylo? Is she going to turn? Is he going to convince her? Why is Luke so hesitant? What happened to Luke that made him make these decisions? These questions are at the center of the characters and their motivations. It's not, hey, look at this cool ship. It's not, sorry, Rogue One, here's Darth Vader, here's Darth Vader, here's Darth Vader. No, it's a trailer that anchors itself on the story points. And I think that, again, it just points to my increasingly irrational optimism for how good this movie is. I really need something. Somebody tell me this is going to suck, because my expectations are getting way too high.
Well, we see her get tortured Snoke in the throne Thank room, you. So that's going to suck for Rey. I mean, that's going to suck hard. She looks like she's in a lot of pain.
That's true.
I think that's a good point about, like she goes to Luke, and right, in the Entertainment Weekly article makes a good point of this, that he's not the mentor she's expecting. He's not the hero she thought he was.
Yeah. I'm going to do a shameless plug. We had Anthony Bresnikan on the Star Wars Report a few weeks ago talking about that article, and he doesn't make any bones about it. Talking to Mark Hamill, they're not at all hesitant to say that's the case, that, you know, don't meet your heroes because they may disappoint you.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, that great shot go ahead, Bethany.
Oh, well, I just had a sudden suspicion, which is, I wonder if in some ways that they're playing that up, or if maybe Luke himself is playing it up. Maybe he knows something that nobody else knows. He's aware of some sort of power or some sort of, I'll back up a little bit. Does everybody else think that Snoke is quite possibly talking to Rey the entire trailer, not just part of it?
You know, I've heard that a lot, and I still say no, and I hope no. I really hope he's referring to Kylo. But I know a lot of people think that it's
Rey. You know, why didn't he find her already?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that's weak sauce to say he's talking about Rey. But that's my opinion. I know a lot of people disagree. So I'm not saying anyone's wrong, but I know the common consensus now is that he's addressing Rey, but I really don't think so.
Well, yeah.
I just wonder if Luke would take the opposite approach of Yoda and to a degree allow Rey to face some sort of trial, perhaps Rey? In order to save Leia, along the lines of Luke did in Empire Strikes Back. But this would be, instead of discouraging Rey, Luke might allow her to do it as a part of her training, or to hold to her values, or if at some point she will actually turn to the dark side, because he seems really skeptical, like really, really skeptical.
You know, I think it's, you know, what's important to remember too, because a lot of, and I know a lot of folks have talked about this as well, but from this trailer, we see that Last Jedi is going to hit a lot of similar beats to Empire Strikes Back, insofar as that it's going to act like the middle chapter of a Star Wars movie, a.k.a. get really personal, get kind of dark. You know, characters are going to come up to brick walls, and they're going to have to surmount lots of struggles. If that's the case, and again, I don't think Last Jedi is going to be Empire 2.0, and I really hope it doesn't. But also remember that when Luke shows up on Dagobah, Yoda toys with him a bit, right? Like, he's testing him. There could be some element of that in what Luke's doing with Rey. Maybe he's really trying to get, you know, underneath the surface and understand her true motivations. I don't know that that would be the I don't know that that's definitely going to be the case. I mean, what we've seen so far seems to indicate that he's going to be very reluctant to train her. But you know, I think there could be some element of him really testing the waters with her, maybe not even intentionally, right? Like, Yoda is intentionally testing Luke when he shows up on Dagobah, but maybe, you know, Luke continually rejects her, but, you know, her, I feel like this is like just some sort of ancient story, and I don't know where I'm pulling this from, but like the idea of, like, you know, an apprentice going to their master and just standing outside their door for days on end, waiting for them finally to take them on, right? This showing of dedication and commitment to what lies ahead. I could imagine Fight that Club. Maybe. Yeah. Fight Club. Exactly. I could see that being maybe a little bit of Rey's stance here, right? Like, she continually keeps showing up, and eventually Luke sees something beyond his fear of her, and finally takes her on.
See,
Riley, I know you got to get going here soon. Do you have anything else you want to really hit before you have to take off?
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Yeah, unfortunately, I do. I'm on a little family trip here, so I've been told I'm scheduled to watch Forrest Gump. So that's the thing that's happening. What's funny is, so funny to tell. So, like, I went for a little stroll, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna walk around the block. And I'm definitely like three blocks away from the house now. So you guys have me for like whatever time it takes me to figure out where the heck I am, which is a great thing to do and podcast to actually answer your question. With the trailer, like, overall, I think it just shows a lot of promise for the characters. Like, I don't want to. I do kind of feel like if the Leia death, quote unquote, or more, I think evidently, the Rey interaction with Kylo at the end are actual elements of the plot of the film, I'm not sure I would have wanted to know that. I think that's kind of where Rian Johnson's tweet comes in. So there is an element of where I just think it was a little more revealing on the story side than any trailers we've had before. Because, like, remember, The Force Awakens was just like, you know, like, oh, here's a droid.
Pretty scenery.
Here's a stormtrooper. We don't know who he is, where he is, what his motivations are. We just know he's, like, really out of breath. That's, like, that's what we learned with the other one. So, I don't know. Mark, where are you at? Because you haven't had a chance to be on the main show because my laptop was stolen in New York at New York Comic Con. Fun story. I've been podcasting stranded until like a day ago. I want to hear what your kind of overall takeaway was.
Well, you know, I think about if they kill Leia at that angle a lot. You know, I mean, when I first saw it, I saw that the similarities to Legends, and, you know, I've often wondered if we were going to kill Han in the first one, Leia in the second one, and Luke in the third one. And if they were to commit to that, now we've seen Rogue One where they commit to a story that's really dark. But if they were to commit to that, if they commit to it here, it's like, well, do they want to give us a little warning? Do they want to get people more prepared for it? I mean, because with everything that happened with Carrie Fisher this year, it's a more sensitive topic than ever before with any other characters, save maybe Brian O'Connor in the Fast and the Furious. So that's definitely something that really stood out to me. So in that moment, I started thinking about it, like, you know, am I in that boat with you, Riley, where I'm like, oh, they couldn't possibly go there and tease it already. But then there's the other side of it. Like, maybe this is the training wheels. Maybe this is getting our mind ready for the idea that, yeah, they are going to go there. And like Rogue One, there may be some sacrifices that have to be made for the overall story. So that's definitely something that jumped right out.
Mm. Well, I also do want to point out that, first of all, I'm going to blanketly take a stand against Mark's theory, not because it doesn't have good points, but because my poor heart can't take it right now.
It's like, I can't. Yeah.
But also, while they've said that the movie is finished, done, complete, nothing will be added, and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth, that doesn't mean to say that there may be footage in the trailer that not only isn't footage that we see in the final cut of the film, but is entirely discarded earlier footage that got stuck in the trailer. To deceive.
Yeah, that's true. Trailer editing can be kind of deceptive. All right, guys, I'm rounding the corner to the house, so I do have a parting thought. And by parting thought, I mean a totally selfish plug. All right, here's the thing. Everybody's listening to this on the Star Wars Report feed. Go subscribe to the Wampus Lair, because they have awesome discussions like this all the time. Go do it. Now that I've been selfless, allow me to be selfish. Everybody right now, go to YouTube and just search for the Star Wars Report. You'll find our YouTube channel. We haven't really done a lot with it, but I'm posting some more videos in the upcoming Last Jedi craziness. And most importantly, listen, I don't know about you guys. Old Riley's a little tired, a little grumpy about the whole reaction video industry that has been popping up. Like, come on, guys. If you do it and you enjoy it, I get it. But man, is it a thing that like everyone has to do now? At least that's the way it feels. I had a conversation with this about Bruce, with my producer Bruce, of course, here on the Star Wars Report, and we were like, "All right, well, we're doing one." But you know what? There's a twist. We're shooting a reaction video where we're not allowed to react, and we will stay stone faced to the entire trailer. And that's what we did. And you can go watch it on YouTube right now. So,
you know. Riley, that's an interesting point, Riley. I was actually thinking about that myself the other day. I find the age of reaction videos ridiculous. I don't like them. I don't watch them. I think it's silly. And I don't
so
mean
go
to,
watch our non-reaction.
Yeah,
we're not allowed to react.
I don't want
a lot of fun.
I don't want to be rude to anybody that does. I know it's very popular right now, but I just don't get it. Especially something like this. Like, enjoy this for yourself, right? Like, why do you have to make everything on display? You know, like it. Keep something for yourself. That's why I don't fully understand it, you know? That's my opinion. I'm with you, though. I think they're silly. So you'll never see me doing one. So.
But, Carl, that's what the shower's for. You got all that time to yourself, and then, you know, like, I got right back from Scouts. I was like, everybody wants to know what I think. Like, I'm getting tweets. What'd you think of the trailer? Well, this is what I think.
Mark, so had you done a reaction video before? Was this the first time for you?
No, this was, I think, my second. See, it's hard because, like, actually, I think this is probably my third, because on my second one, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, this isn't like, okay, yeah, it was okay, but wasn't that great. But every now and again, you'll see something, you know, not in my own videos, but something in someone else's video where you're just laughing really hard because of their reaction. I think for me, it was more like as I was watching, I was thinking there was one moment where I'm like, she's got a different lightsaber. I was convinced that she's got her own lightsaber. She crafted one. So, like, of course, like for 10 minutes afterwards, I was like in my head thinking, how is this going to be? Like, she's going to be crafting one. Is Luke going to be like over her shoulder like that little robot droid was in the Clone Wars? Like, yeah, it was funny. So, for me, it was more like the adventure of because
here's the with thing, my though. Here's the thing. You know,
evolve. Now it's like now I've got this moment where I can record that 30 seconds.
It's, at the end of the day, though, like I think all reaction videos, you know that you're filming yourself and you're filming it for other people. It changes the way you watch it. Like the inner psychologist in me tells me that. Like you know that you have an audience, therefore you have to react a certain way. Whether or not it's like you're authentically feeling that, you know you need to elicit a response in those who watch it. And I think that
unless
takes
you're
away
Bruce
from
Gibson, in which case you pick your teeth halfway through.
So again, I don't mean to sound like judgy or like a jerk, but that's an interesting point you bring up, Riley. And I just think anyone that does these, whether you're consciously or aware of it or not, but subconsciously. You do know that this is something you're doing for a performance, right? You're performing this for some sort of viewer. Therefore, it taints your reaction. So I'm not saying that it makes it bad or inauthentic, but it certainly taints it. So
it's a different, it's a different bottle of wax, bag of rock. It's a different, whatever the thing. It's a different lightsaber hilt. I've lost. I give up on metaphors.
There's truth guys, there because I don't do mine live.
So I'm going to bounce. Yeah. Sorry to say it, but I'm going to bounce, guys. Seriously, Carl, thanks for doing this. And we will be in touch for sure, man. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for coming on, Riley. Have fun with Forrest Gump.
Absolutely. Listen, run, Forrest, run.
Like that bubblegum shrimp. Man. That's good shrimp.
You know, I think reaction videos were once better than they currently are. In terms of, I think it used to be that phenomenon of like showing your best friend Star Wars for the first time, or showing your friend, your huge Star Wars fan friend who hasn't seen the trailer because he was on an airplane or something like that, and you're watching the trailer with him for the first time, and you're going to stare at him to see his every reaction and see where it differs from yours. Like, I think that was the original idea, and that some people really did capture that well, but I think now that it's so in our mind as a thing on YouTube that we can't help but I think that 95% of people who film reaction videos now can't help but feel pressure to be more excited or more intense or like more weeping or shouting or basically to one up a different reaction video. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that distracts from the original idea of, well, I'm just going to put a camera on me, forget about it, and then watch the video.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The best ones are the ones where the people don't realize they're being videoed. Exactly. You know, like I remember my grandma watching Home Alone for the first time, and then the third time, and the fourth time, and every time she watches it, she seems to forget she's ever watched it. And every time, as she's laughing through that, like everybody in the room is just like, "Oh my god, yeah, he stepped on a nail. That's the funniest thing I've ever seen." Like you just can't help but be just infected by the infectiousness of her laughter. And so like that phenomenon like really launched. Like, so when I do mine, like that's something I think about, is like I try to put the camera somewhere where I'm not realizing it's there. And I don't ever really do the live stream that often, because like that one I always feel it's harder to continually be more happy, because I don't want to put on something that's really bummer. Like if I'm watching and hate it, like that's something I think about, because I'm on the fence with a lot of my Star Wars as a Legends fan. So I'm like, man, if this swings the wrong way, this could be a really downer video, right? So then I would delete it. I wouldn't put it online if it was bad. But I think about the fact that I don't want to be performing to the camera. I want it to be that moment of when I'm watching certain things with my daughter and stuff, like when we're watching Clone Wars and stuff, and like Thrawn walks out and I didn't realize he was going to be in this episode. So I'll squeal like a little 5-year-old girl, and my daughter loves it, you know? So it's like, that's the kind of stuff I'm hoping to capture when I'm doing it. And if I can share some laughter along the way, like that's fun. But not everybody's out there to do that. You see some of these where it is like, oh man, like you're really trying hard. And then you got some people out there that really have the gift of gab and they put on a really good show. So you definitely want to measure who you're following with that. Cause like, I'm not posting mine. Mine was really actually boring. The funniest thing about it was that it was upside down when I posted it.
Yeah. Mark, let me ask you a question. So, because you are like a Legends guru, what do you think the chances are, if any, that Rey could be related to Kylo?
You know, a long time ago, I thought, yeah. And then, you know, Nate was quick to point out the big age gap. So that's really pushing it hard for me. And then I was pushing the whole angle of maybe it's a Kenobi and a Mandalorian going with Satine or whatever her name was. Yeah, I got it right. It was Satine, not Sabine, because I always try to get those two confused in my head before I say it. So I got it right for once. But they've even kind of put that one to rest. So I want a connection, but at the same time, there's so many people out there that are like, we don't have to have a connection. Screw you, Legends fans and your connections. That I'm like, I get it if they don't, but I don't know. Like for me, there's this angle where I'm like, you know, Luke could easily be in a version of the new father, Kylo the son and Rey the daughter, in a sense, and not having that connection of father, son and daughter, but them being the new figures in that aspect of the prophecy that Anakin never fulfilled as the chosen one. In Legend side, I've always believed really hard in that chosen one bloodline. So that was always something that I really enjoyed. I always liked the next generation stories, you know, following where Ben was going to go, where Jaina was going to continue to go, following Cade Skywalker, Luke's great grandson or great great grandson, however the story may be. But that for me, that's always been the thing that I've really enjoyed. And you know, at times I get where that could be daunting for other people and stuff to have everything connect. But to me, that's always been the mystery of the Force. You know, it's like, yeah, it's clever writing, but really, that's the mystery of the Force, man. It's the Force wills it, man. The Force willed it, so it is.
Go ahead, Jason.
I have something to pose to Bethany and Mark in particular, because we talked about it a little bit on our last show, Carl. I'm not convinced, and I was talking about this with some people like the night before the trailer came out. I had nothing to back this up, but I told them I'm not convinced Kylo's story ends with episode 9. And then we got this trailer, and I'm wondering if, as much as Rey is exploring where she fits in all of this, it almost looks like Kylo is wandering around his own gray area as well. Did you guys get that at all? Is there hope for absolutely. Kylo Ren?
I have maintained that as much as I dislike Kylo on a deeply personal level, that I still think that his character is potentially redeemable, because again, if we think back to Star Wars or possibly even to real life, I do think that people can be redeemed. And Darth Vader committed so many atrocities, both against his own wife, his own children, killing Jedi children, and helping to enslave a galaxy. You know, I go over this to remind people of how absolutely terrible Darth Vader was, because, frankly, I think as Star Wars fans, our reaction to Kylo is a bit more extreme, because he definitely hasn't really...
Because he killed Han Solo.
But also, we don't have any history with the character outside of, oh, he loses his temper, he's pretty darn insane and insecure, talks to ghosts that we, the audience, can't see, and killed Han Solo. So I think that we give Kylo too little credit for potential redemption, because I honestly think that did something awful to him, and whether or not that turns him into a complete and total villain like the Emperor, or to someone who is torn in the end like Vader and wants to do something better, I think we will see either of those paths at least begin to happen in this film. If not, we can tell solidly one way or the other. But I think it's quite possible. He's young. He is at least partly crazy. He's ridiculously insecure. And it is quite possible that killing his father shakes him up enough to realize that this isn't what he wants to be, that he may actually want to reach back to the light that's calling out to him.
I could see Kylo being like the new Zuko, you know, or was that the Fire Lord kid's name from the Avatar one, where he started out the big bad guy and by the end he was like a good buddy. Like, Kylo seems to have something about him, and maybe that's what it is that Snoke and Luke both saw originally, that maybe Rey is mirroring it. You know, for me, it's just interesting because, like, it almost does feel like Jason, when he takes the 5-year sojourn at the end of the New Jedi Order to go learn other Force traditions, maybe that's what Kylo's been doing all this time, and what he's trying to do with Snoke is just to broaden his horizons and learn more. And maybe it takes Rey coming along to make him realize that, you know, maybe I am being the tool that my father said I was being, and maybe this is the only way I can get out. I mean, because it's hard for me to see the redemption, because I'm like, man, you killed my man. Like, you know, like that's a hard one for me to forgive right now. And I want to, because you got the name Ben, and I loved Ben Skywalker so much, and I love the Solo children so much, and I want to love you too, Kylo, but dang it, you're making it hard. So I don't know. I'm conflicted.
I think,
Do you have any further thoughts, Carl?
I think this is very much, I really think that, you know, this movie is going to be very much Kylo and Rey's story, which I know we talked about a lot on the last episode, but they are two sides of one coin, right? Like, even the trailer, I think, really mimics that, right? We start with Kylo's story, then we go into Rey's, and we're back into Kylo's, and we're back into Rey's. I mean, again, I think we can – everyone's noted that this trailer doesn't really give us anything about the new characters, right? And kind of like, you know, Riley said before you left, but – this trailer was very, very much selling us on the story, selling us on the character points and the character conflict that we're going to experience in this film. And I really think that something is going to bring Rey and Kylo together. I think, you know, again, the end of that trailer, right, with, you know, someone needs to show me my place and all this, and he raises his hand. Again, I don't think that's exactly where it's happening. I think that's Rey talking to Luke. Again, she's wearing her Force Awakens outfit. This is early in the film for her. Kylo is in the midst of some sort of burning wreckage, right? Like, Rey doesn't seem to be in that particular setting. But I do think that, again, this trailer is hinting at these two are in some capacity coming together by the end of this film. I don't know in what way or how, but I could definitely see them coming together at the end of the film.
You know, Carl?
Yeah.
The thing that reminds me of that, too, is how does she get away from Luke? You know, I mean, it's like the last we saw her, she's with Luke. And that's where I think, you know, something Luke says or does, I don't necessarily think he goes bad, but I think that there's a darkness that his fear allows there to be a darkness that pushes Rey away. But we see Rey with Snoke being tortured. I mean, in that scene where we see her laying back and screaming, you could see Snoke's gold robe and his throne room. So she manages to get in front of Snoke at somehow, some way. So the question I have there is either does Kylo come in to save her from Snoke, or does Kylo show up along the way and end up bringing her to Snoke? Or does he do both? Like, because I mean, I feel like you're right that there's this whole this duology with them, that there are two sides of this coin, and I wish there was not that 10-year gap, because I would have loved for them to be twins. Like, that would just set me. I would be doing backflips. I mean, I would probably start crying and screaming and standing up and doing a little dance at the same time in the middle of the theater, and I would not. I'd be shameless about it. I would, if that was the case. Then they'd be like, find some weird force way to do it, like they did with Tanelka. Oh, you know, she held on to the second twin for 10 years in her stomach. She just, everybody thought she was had some bad digestion.
What about you, Bethany? Do you see any sort of either bloodline relation between Kylo and Rey, or some sort of coming together of them? Can you see that playing out?
I think that there will be some sort of connection. I don't know if it will be blood or if it will be training or it will simply be that they're two very young, very confused, extraordinarily powerful force users sharing a galaxy on opposite sides. And that's going to create a connection that the audience will strongly feel. So I actually think, Mark, that in the end, you'll be right, because there will be a connection there, even if they're not siblings or they're not cousins or they're just not related at all. And we freaking never find out who Rey is, which admittedly would be mildly frustrating. But at the same time, I believe that the connection will be there regardless of what format it takes.
Yeah, I
see the two of them coming together in some fashion in this movie. They have to be put into a situation, I feel, where they have to work together. I think we're going to have them forced into some sort of situation, whether they want to be in that situation or not, want to work together or not. I feel like they're going to have to work together to get out of some sort of situation, and that will help crystallize the way they react to such situation, the way they react to how they work together will crystallize who they are and what their purpose is. But I also suspect that we're going to get some sort of hero moment for Luke, where he's going to come out of nowhere at the end. He's going to reject Rey, and he's going to come out of nowhere at the end and do what we all wanted him to do on Starkiller Base in The Force Awakens, and just, you know, show up and kick butt and take names.
But what if he's more like Yoda, though? I mean, think about that. Like, Yoda had two roles in both films, and they were both really small when you think about it.
The thing is, Mark, though, that Yoda and Luke are at such very different places, because Yoda, when we see him in Empire, is in the final chapter of his life, and he knows that essentially the last thing that he will do as a physical being on this earth will be to influence Luke in some form or fashion. And it's almost like he's waiting for that before passing on. And in this case, Luke is troubled. He's alone. And in so many ways, I think that this movie will rest very heavily on what Luke Skywalker does and does not do but we just don't know how that will take place. And I also think that, you know, I've discussed, oh, maybe Luke will do something that makes Rey feel betrayed, even if it's not a true betrayal, or maybe he will reject her or test her or something along those lines. But at the same time, I think in the end, he will realize that he needs to do something and not remain a hermit. And I think that he will understand that Rey is reaching out to him in a very genuine way, and that hopefully he won't permanently reject her because she desperately needs help and guidance. Because, you know, you have, again, she's in a very vulnerable position, and while her heart is pure, all that has to happen is be captured by someone like Snoke, tortured, manipulated, tricked, and so on and so forth. I mean, we saw what happened to Anakin under Palpatine, and we've seen what happened to Kylo with Snoke's influence. So Rey is not above all possibility of falling to the dark side. All Jedi or all Force users, I think, have to be intentional about whether or not they're doing their actions for good reasons or for selfish reasons. And Rey is extremely vulnerable, and she is desperately wanting a family, and that could turn selfish pretty easily. So in the end, I think no matter how rocky it is, Luke will save the day.
You got my brain thinking of things.
I just had a wild, funny thought here. What if, you know, Luke pushes Rey away, she leaves Octo, and he stays behind, and what gets him to re-engage, get off his butt, and get back out into the galaxy is, what if he gets a visit from Maz?
I like that.
That just popped into my head while we were talking. I have no idea, no proof that could actually happen. No, you know, nothing points to that being a possibility. But I think it'd be fun if he had a visit from Maz, and, you know, instead of, you know, Yoda or Obi-Wan poking at Luke going, what are you doing sitting here? We get Maz showing up because this is the last place her boyfriend was, you know,
that's so funny, because I was thinking of a different angle to get to the same thing with Luke being taken from the planet. But for me, it was like, what if we find out that through flashbacks that Snoke has an ability to corrupt Force users? And when we see Rey getting tortured, that's him possessing her and bringing her over to replace Kylo. And then Kylo's been rejected, and Kylo goes and seeks out Luke going, look, she's been seduced. She's now his number two. We've got to stop them. And now it becomes a matter of, will Luke trust Kylo again to save Rey?
Oh, geez.
Wow. Talk about, man, that's crazy.
That is quite, wow.
Talk about facing a dark destiny.
Here's a thought. You know, you mentioned Maz's boyfriend. Let's not forget, and this is something I haven't heard anybody talk about, Chewie is on Octu. And Luke is obviously a much different person than probably when Chewie last saw him, not to mention all of us fans. How's Chewie going to interact with Luke, do you think? You know, I mean, if Rey shows up, Chewie definitely has taken a shine to Rey. Like, he likes her. You know, he sticks around to save her and Finn at the end of the movie. You know, he accompanies her as her co-pilot. He seems to almost see her as the one who's inherited the Falcon. Like, Chewie doesn't take ownership of the Falcon. He seems to kind of step aside for Rey to have that ownership. How's he going to interact with Luke? How's he going to interact with Luke rejecting Rey, if at all? What do you guys think about that?
He's going to be like, I don't even know this Luke. Because, I mean, this is a different Chewie than we remember. This guy's been on Kashyyyk almost the entire time since we saw him last. Like, him and Han barely had any adventures even. Like, I'm still blown away that that's what they did to Han's relationship with the Wookiee. So when we see Han die and we see Chewie come back and he just walks right by Leia, like, he's like, you guys left me on that planet. Like, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's, like, too good for Luke at this point.
Hmm. What do you think, Bethany?
I definitely ascribe to the fan theory /general theory that when Chewie shot Kylo, that he could have killed him and didn't. I love that. So I think that Chewie will be more forgiving than that. but I do think that he would be angry because I would be angry. You know, my best friend and, you know, flying partner and someone who saved my life was killed, and Luke may have had the power or the ability to stop that. I would be angry. So I don't think Chewie will treat Luke as if, oh, you know, I don't care about you anymore. But I think that he'll be angry.
Let him turn, too. There's that angle that Chewie could pull as well. Oh, I like that, Bethany. You always make me think.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you guys, because we could all talk about Rey and Kylo for the entire next 3 hours. At least I could.
I thought that was the plan.
I was wondering what maybe stood out to you guys in the trailer that didn't necessarily have to do with Rey or Luke in terms of other characters or character moments.
Kylo's thruster.
You mean
or not Kylo? Yeah.
So let's talk about anybody but Kylo Ren. I look
a black X-Wing. Yeah. Kylo, yeah. I've named his X-Wing Kylo.
You know, interesting.
Post thruster.
So here again, yeah. So the great question, Bethany, and I think at the end of the day, it's hard to say what stood out because there's so little of anybody else. But the thing that stands out most to me, and it's in part because Oscar Isaac is gorgeous, but him in that Han Solo jacket is great. And again, I want to go back to something I said earlier where I feel like the space battle is the somewhat opener part of the film. When we get that shot of Poe like leaning out the side of the window there, right, like looking out of the ship, I think they are getting – like it's a surprise attack in the Illuminium system, right? Like they don't see it coming. And Poe, you know, when we see that shot of him using his thruster, I think that's him finally getting to his ship and doing something. Because here's an interesting scenario. When that battle's happening, that space battle, and Kylo's out there just tearing it up like Anakin back in the day or even Han Solo could have, where's Poe, right? Where's Poe? Poe is the best damn pilot in the galaxy. That's probably the only pilot who can give Kylo a run for his money. And as far as, you know, fighter-to-fighter combat. So that's why I really think that Poe is incapacitated in a way like that he's like he's grounded at the moment. Right?
Ordered.
Like
he no. Think about it. The scene with Leia, the people in the background aren't moving. Why? Because the attack hasn't happened. She's feeling Kylo come in with the Force.
Oh.
Like then they attack and she's like, you've got to go. Like she could tell him, like, we're about to be wiped out possibly. You've got to warn everybody else. Like that'd be a perfect reason to use that X-Wing and get out of there. Plus you could have that really great bromanic, mom-manic, whatever you'd want to call it moment where like Leia's going through Han's stuff beforehand and she's like, hey, flyboy, and tosses him the jacket. Like how cool would that be?
Oh, yeah.
Also, where there's such a big power vacuum in the galaxy now, which, you know, most people would discuss after seeing The Force Awakens, but that also means that the Resistance has to seriously step up its game. I think that I forget exactly where I read this, but I was doing research for the Last Jedi panel at Dragon Con, and I came across a lot of snippets about Leia and Poe. And I think that we will see Poe really start to become a military leader because he can do the job the best that anybody can, which in some ways makes him the type of leader who can understand what needs to be done. So I can see him really fleshing out into not just a hotshot pilot and an extremely brave and talented and intelligent and gorgeous human being in this galaxy, but somebody who really starts following Leia's footsteps as a capable, all-around, badass leader.
Are you saying he could be a roguish Jedi by the third movie? Or, I mean, a roguish general by the third movie of this trilogy?
Possibly so, but I think that he may actually own it better and faster than Han ever did.
Remember, we still haven't seen any of, I think it's Admiral Sato. Is that Laura Dern's character that I totally messed up?
No.
What is her name?
Sato is the Rebels.
Whoops.
It's Amy Lynn Holdo.
Admiral Holdo. Yeah, Admiral Holdo. We haven't seen her at all yet. So who knows what the relationship is between her and Leia. And I know she's shown up in the Leia book that just came out recently. But it's curious what's going to go on with them. But What excites me most about Poe, though, too, is, again, like that little speech he gives. I mean, I guess it's not a speech, but I feel like it's part of a speech, right? Like, you know, we're the spark that will ignite the fire that'll burn the first order to the ground. Like, it's such a Rogue One type moment, right? Like this pump up speech. And that's how I've always.
So say we all.
And I just watched Force Awakens a few days ago, and I thoroughly enjoyed it in a way I haven't in a long time. Not that I've ever hated it, but I just really loved it. And I think just watching, I think, again, like Last Jedi is going to make Force Awakens a far better film too, right? Like it's going to it's going to flesh out these characters so much that when you go back to it, you're just going to appreciate it that much more. That being said, I love that moment though when Finn is rescuing Poe and he's like, "We're going to do this." Like, I just like I want Poe in my corner, and I think we're going to get more of that really, you know, fleshed out in Last Jedi. And you know, I don't like it when people are trying to make these comparisons of the new big three to the original big three, right? Like, oh, Rey is the new Luke and Finn's, I guess, the right? Like everybody's trying to like fit them into these holes, which I think is completely wrong because it's a new big three, but they're not following the same characteristics of the original three, yeah. Right? Like,
original big three is largely still around to be anyway. So you know, right. Why are you saying, well, this is the new Luke Skywalker when Luke Skywalker is standing right there? You know.
One of the things I want to ask you guys real quick, though, is what do you guys think about flashbacks? I mean, it's clear we're seeing at least a flashback to Luke's order falling. Do you guys think we're going to get more than just one story point in flashback? And do you think it's all going to happen at once or maybe multiple times?
I think what we're seeing with Luke as far as the flashback to the temple being destroyed, I think this is going to be Luke telling Rey what happened. And I think we might be getting sort of a Force vision in a sense. It's not going to be a flashback in the true sense of a flashback because, you know, well, Star Wars doesn't do flashbacks, but, you know, that can change. You know, I think if we get a flashback, we'll get one. And that'll be the story of, you know, Luke's temple where we see him coming out of the rubble with, you know, his hand and everything. I don't think we're going to get much else in the way of flashback. Because the story moves forward and what we need from the past is information on all the other characters are moving forward. We don't necessarily need the past for Rey. I mean, she can say something in a few sentences that explains it. We don't need a past for Finn. We already know he was taken as a child to be trained as the stormtrooper. Poe's just kind of this all-around cool guy that everyone wants to be their buddy. And, you know, we don't need his backstory necessarily, although it's pretty cool. But as far as the story moving forward, the only real look back we need is what the heck happened with Luke. And I think that's why that's the only flashback we're going to get.
And also, like, think of all the other, well, just specifically the OT, right? Whenever we're getting past events unpacked, it's always through dialogue, it's always through exposition, and they leave it up to mystery. I think too much flashback would really distract us from the film. So I'm with you, Jason. I think it's just going to be one moment. And to some degree, I'd almost want to say, like, I don't want it. Like, right, we've never had flashbacks. I don't think we need them. Again, there's other ways of telling those stories. However, I think we as hardcore Star Wars fans in some way want to see that. I would love to see that story more fleshed out, whether it was in a TV series or a novel or something. Please, my God, not a middle-aged novel. Or middle ground, whatever. Mark, this is something I'll have to talk to you about off-air at some point, but I'm really getting annoyed with all these canon stories being told to fifth grade readers. Like, come on, like, Star Wars books have never been that hard to read, just give it to us straight. But that being said, you know, that's kind of my two cents. What about you, Bethany? Where do you stand on the whole flashback scene?
I agree, if only because, not because we're like, Star Wars never does flashbacks, because that's a legitimate storytelling device as well if done properly. Granted, I would never want it to be as much as, for example, the TV show Arrow, which has a significant portion of its plot is entirely built in flashbacks. So I'm not calling for that, but I do think that it would be limited more because this is the second in a trilogy, and I don't think that they will want to reveal too terribly much.
See, when I remember watching this, I thought we were seeing two flashbacks in the aspect of when we see Kylo in Snoke's red room, throne room, if it is that, and he picks the lightsaber up off the ground. I thought that lightsaber was destroyed by Rey back on Starkiller Base. So unless he crafted another one that looked exactly like it, I was wondering if that was maybe his first assignment as Kylo Ren or something like that that we were seeing, or something along those lines, because there seems something very formal about that moment. And he was also wearing the original armor. So I was kind of like, maybe that was a flashback too.
That's so, Mark, that is such a cool thought, right? Like, what if that is him, right? Like, cause I feel like he's going to smash his helmet at the start of the film. I mean, again, he's probably got like a closet full of them, like Superman. He's just going to smash one, but what a great point. Like this, my original thought is this is him like coming back to Snoke, right? He's picking up his saber to start his new method of training, which in some capacity that might happen in the film. But what if this is a flashback and his first assignment is to go after the Jedi Temple that Luke has now created? And also there was something I posted on our Facebook this week about, you know, Luke potentially having, you know, Vader's crystal, and how cool would it be if he purified it? But, you know, I'm such a fool. So, I think his name was Matt Morris, made a great point of like, dude, that thing fell down the core of the Death Star. It's no way Luke got it, which is a fair point, right? Like Luke, how Maz got Luke's lightsabers. Hopefully we'll get that story eventually. I'm sure we will. But it makes sense. Cloud City doesn't blow up. Vader's, you know, Vader's hilt goes crashing down that, you know, chasm, and then, you know, 10 minutes later the station blows up. So it's very unlikely that Luke has Vader's kyber. But how cool would it be if like Kylo's kyber was one of two things? One, it's just his own, he corrupted his own lightsaber that he built while in Luke's tutelage. But how more powerful would it be? And I know it'd piss a lot of fans off, but how much more cool would it be if he had taken Luke's kyber from his green saber and corrupted that?
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, and I was thinking, you know, so far the aspect of how we've got these visions have been Force visions. You know, the flashbacks have all taken place like that with Rey, and the title of the first movie is The Force Awakens. What if it's the Force that's giving her these visions, and what if we see that in that line where the vision is about Ben Solo? That maybe Bethany's right. Maybe it's all about her redeeming Ben.
Mm. Ooh, that's the idea of flashbacks is totally cool. And also that one line in the trailer where Rey says something has awoken in me leaves absolutely no doubt that it was the Force that awakened in Rey. So maybe in some ways these Force visions are not unique to her in the sense that nobody else can have Force visions, but maybe there's a greater purpose to them.
Or it could be unique to her in the aspect that the Force is specifically giving her these visions, kind of like how, you know, Mace had the shatter point, Karan Horn, he couldn't do telekinesis. Certain Jedi had certain abilities they were better at, some were worse at, and so on and so forth. So what if this is one of those things that it just happens to be something that she's getting a rare gift with, kind of like Voss. Or Voss things and learning history. You know, maybe she's having the Force speak to her.
Well, it's possible, and it's not like we haven't seen visions before, or Anakin has them quite a bit. He's got, you know, but they come to him more in dreams than anything. And so, you know, we've addressed the issue of visions and, you know, the Force moving through those before. And so it's entirely possible that we're getting more of those. And I like the idea, perhaps she's getting these visions while she's training, perhaps, you know, and she... And that's, you know, one thing that happens when she asks. Maybe when she okay, the cave where she's in the water with Luke and everything. I am like convinced that's her cave moment. Like if we're comparing this back to Empire, that's her moment. She dives into this water, and what if she gets the vision of what happened with Luke and the Jedi Temple? What if that's you know, she's down there, she's immersing, she's reaching out, and that's when she sees that vision, and it rocks her, and she comes up and asks Luke about it, and that's why he's so defensive.
You know, Jason, what a cool point. If that's where she, what if she, like you said, what if she's the one who just gets that somewhat inadvertently? It could be the Force is trying to make sense for her of why Luke is so reluctant, right? Like, here she is all upset about Luke not training her. She has this cave experience, and the Force is kind of explaining to her where Luke's caution is coming from.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I could see that. That would play out well.
So, you know.
Wow.
Go ahead, Bethany.
I was just thinking of all the different plot devices and ideas we've talked about, and Force visions as opposed to flashbacks, and all the different ways that Luke and Rey could interact, and so on and so forth. And I do want to say that this trailer just has me so excited for the movie, and not in the sense of like, oh, this movie will be perfect and shall surpass all other movies in existence, but more just in terms of I'm so excited to see what they end up doing, because I don't have my heart set on any particular plot or any particular way that the movie should go. And so, for example, if this is a flashback or if this is a Force vision, I'll be happy either way, as long as it doesn't feel really like forced or clunky or just unnatural to the film, which, you know, I don't think is too much of a risk of happening. So
I'm totally intended.
I'm just so excited about it that in some ways, like it sounds as if I'm not a Star Wars fan to say this, but in many ways I don't really care how it's done, but more the end result, if that makes sense. You know, I'm not married to the idea of Rey having to be related to X person or Y person, for example. I'm just really excited to figure out what is actually going on come December.
Well, a lot of conventions and stuff, that's the beauty of the panels, is getting to the behind-the-scenes process. And we've talked about this, Bethany, on the Star Wars Report, how, you know, 10 years down the road when they do the look back on what it was like when they were making it. And at that time, we couldn't anticipate Carrie Fisher's death. But since she's passed away, I've been curious as to what the options were, you know, and when they get to that point where they'll be able to come forward with that and it won't be a touchy subject. Because it's got to be interesting in the aspect of storytelling and how real life impacts the fictional story you're trying to tell and where you have to go forward. I mean, you think about what they did with Legends and making it its own entity and shoving it off to the side so they would have all this creative freedom, and then you have something like that that covers your creative freedom all over again. I mean, you know, they had a few options available to them, and it'd be interesting to find out what those options were and how heavily they weighed each one before they went forward. You know, I mean, did they have a whole different script planned out, or did they originally have everything planned out into a way that it really didn't impact? Because that was, you know, like I said originally, I always thought maybe Leia was going to die in this film anyway. And if that was the case, maybe all they lost was one or two scenes. You know, I mean, I'm very curious in that regard to see the behind the the behind the scenes veil come up and learn what happened there. So in that regard, I'm right there with you. I mean, it's going to be exciting no matter what we get. But I think I'm ready, though, to hit the brakes. Like, I don't want to see any of the TV spots or any other trailers. I think for me, this is good. And I may be actually tapping out on watching this stuff. I know that there was a TV trailer that hit online. I saw it pop up on my feed earlier today, and I'm like, I'm not watching it. I'm not going to do it. Because I'm afraid I'm going to learn too much. Like, I'm already picking this thing apart in such a way that, you know, I could see angles of perceptions of how this could go. And perceptions are what's going to ruin things for me. So I think this is a good time to hit the brakes on it for me. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I think I got to back away from the trough.
You know?
Well,
go ahead, Jason.
Well, for me, the thing with this trailer is this trailer gives us so much without actually giving us anything at all. And we just spent an hour plus talking about all the different possibilities that could come out of this trailer, of what we're seeing from this trailer for a movie that this trailer consists of maybe, you know, 8% of all the shots in the entire show. You know, there's so much more than we have not seen at all. And the trailer is crafted in such a way that it gives us a general idea of some of the story beats that could happen, but it doesn't give us the order of them. It doesn't give us any real concrete, this will happen with these story beats. And there's so many possibilities of how those story beats could go that I think there's so – it's so wide open. And so this trailer has been absolutely perfect for me because it gives us so much without giving us anything concrete. And I love it because there's so much to speculate about but nothing to hang your hat on and say, no, this is actually definitely going to happen. So.
Oh, but Ray's definitely going to get tortured by Snoke, like, because that's hot.
No, just kidding. Yes, true.
That could could be a cutscene.
Yeah, that's just it. With Rogue One, I can't trust anything anymore. For me, it all hinges back to Episode One, right? I remember the music, and we saw the mist, and we saw this little fronds moving in the mist, and you're like, wait, what are those? Are those horses? No, they're two-legged little biped things. Is that the Gungan army? Oh, my God, this is going to be awesome. This war is going to be the end of all wars. And then I saw it in the theater, like, okay, that was all right, but that wasn't what I thought I was going to get. I thought I was going to get some missed encounter. What's going on here?
I agree with Mark, but actually for different reasons. I've done the whole watch every TV spot, every trailer, the international versions of the trailers to movies before, for example, the Marvel movies, and especially with the Avengers Age of Ultron, I found myself really burnt out on specific dialogue phrases and specific scenes because it was just repeated. Because again, these films are marketed to millions and millions of people, not just the hardcore Star Wars or Marvel fan. So yeah, we see so much more than what its actual intended audience is for, which is, oh, somebody will see like one TV spot and they'll see the trailer like three times. Whereas we as hardcore Star Wars fans can get really excited and watch everything a bunch of times. And to me, it becomes this watch for that one line in the movie, which then takes me out of the movie too much. And that's just a totally personal thing where it's like that one line that gets repeated in every Deadpool trailer, the one zinger from each Spider-Man trailer. That in the end, I was just like, oh, I've heard this singer 15 or 20 times now, and I've memorized it and the entire scene around it. And so that's what I don't want to happen. So if there's an international trailer, I'll totally watch it. But I will probably avoid TV spots unless I hear from somebody, oh, this one's really great and unique and not very spoilery. Then I'll watch it.
Yeah, if it's forced on me when I'm watching Netflix, I'm like, oh, man, I got to watch it now, I guess.
The only TV spot I watched for Rogue One was the one that the ghost was in. And that's because it just was everywhere. And everyone was talking about it, like, oh, my gosh, the ghost is in Rogue One. And because I don't watch a lot of TV, like, you know, terrestrial TV with all the commercials and everything anymore anyways. I watch a bunch of Netflix and other, you know, other streaming services. And so I they're just not in my wheelhouse. And TV spots are cut-ups primarily of all the trailers we've already gotten. So I'll watch trailers. I go out and I seek out movie trailers. TV spots, I don't really care about that much. And I have never really sought out TV spots. And especially with, you know, the Disney marketing machine behind them, Force Awakens and Rogue One just churned out a new TV spot. Like, it was like three TV spots a week for 5 weeks leading up to the movie. I swear it was that much, if not more. So I'm not going to keep up with TV spots at all. I don't really care too much about them.
Hear, hear. So say we all.
You know what? So to be consistent with at least the Star Wars Report, I think we're going to start wrapping this one up. Before we do, though, I want to give everybody a last chance if there's something you really wanted to say or haven't been able to express, something we might have missed. Just kind of final thoughts before we wrap this episode down. Mark, we'll start with you.
Well, for me, the one thing that I came away with was Luke's eyes. You know, when the ground cracked and Luke looked up better, the panic when he, laid it out there. I've only seen that kind of raw power once. It didn't scare me then, but it scares me now. The look of just pure panic and ready to flee
was how I felt, but wanting to flee towards the theater. So like, I can't wait to love or hate wherever Luke's going to go, because like Luke's always been my favorite EU fans or EU character. So to see this new Luke, it's a hard swallow sometimes because I know where he's gone in other directions and other universes, which was awesome. But so this, to see a scared Luke, like I'm scared myself, but equally excited.
Nice. Bethany.
I'm just so incredibly excited about this film, which I've probably said about five times in this one show now. but I just can't wait to see where the plot takes us, specifically with Rey and Luke. And I'm also way more intrigued to find out more about Kylo, because as much as I've hated him as a character, which was kind of the point in The Force Awakens, but I was interested in him, but not at all in the same way as I was with other characters. And this trailer made me a lot more interested in Kylo Ren, which is not something I was expecting. So that was a new thing for me.
Jason.
The success of this trailer for me is that with... how do I want to put this? Let me back up. I have been going back and doing a binge listen of Full of Sith because I stopped listening to the show very early on when they started addressing some of the spoilers for The Force Awakens. I ended up with like almost 200 episodes backlogged on my iTunes and decided I either need to delete this or get started on it, and I decided to get started on it, and I've been binge listening to Full of Sith. And so when this trailer came out, I was listening to Full of Sith's international trailer reaction to The Force Awakens. And so I have been re-listening to all of The Force Awakens lead up while watching this trailer from Full of Sith. And the success of the Last Jedi trailer that just came out is that even without me having the time to go back and rewatch The Force Awakens since this trailer came out, my estimation and my enjoyment of that film has already increased. And just due to the story possibilities that we're seeing come out of it and the stuff that we're seeing, what we're about to witness here in just a couple of months, the possibilities, the emotional beats, the character beats that it looks like we're going to be getting have me absolutely thrilled and excited. And I've been saying this almost since the beginning, is that the success of The Force Awakens depends greatly on where the trilogy goes and how they answer the questions The Force Awakens brings up. And it looks like we're going to start getting some really fascinating answers to those questions. And that has me excited. And that has already raised my estimation and my enjoyment of The Force Awakens as I think back on it. So that's the success of this trailer. And so for me, it's already won.
Nice.
Carl, well, what about you?
I was hoping somebody would ask me. I think just at the end of the day, what excites me most about the trailer is, and I made this point on a previous episode, but is the just consistent story they tell in the trailer itself. And like you said, Jason, they show so much but say so little. But I love that, again, that this is going to be that this middle chapter where we really explore the depths of characters, what their conflict is, what they're going to have to, what they're going to have to overcome in order to become a hero or to become a true villain even. It's definitely, I think you said this, Bethany, though, I'm really excited about Kylo's story in a way that I wouldn't have cared about as much in The Force Awakens. I thought he was really cool in The Force Awakens, but then I hated him for killing Han, like you, Mark. Mm-hmm. But now I'm really fascinated about his character. But also, just simply put, at the end of the day, this movie is going to delve into the Force, the nature of the Force, and what the Force has to do with all of these characters. And at the end of the day, that is my favorite form of Star Wars. You can write all the Inferno Squadron books you want. I won't read one of them because I don't care about troops. What I care about is the Force and how it interacts with characters and influences the galaxy. So this film is going to, I think, just hit me right out of the park, into the stars, probably meet up with Rey, and I'll be like, what's up, Rey? She'll be like, what's up, Mr. Leclerc? I don't know what that accent was, but it wasn't accurate at all. but yeah, that's what I'm most excited about in this film. But that being said, you know, I know Star Wars Report, you guys are a little bit more tidy about keeping track of time. So for the sake of time, and again, I know we could all talk about this stuff for another day, to be honest, nonstop probably, because that's the beauty of Star Wars fandom. But before we wrap this up, I want to give you, you know, Mark and Bethany. And Bethany, I know you are much more on the fringe, I think, of the Star Wars Report now with all the stuff going on in your life. But how can folks get in touch with all the wonderful things you guys are both doing?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Bethany L. Blanton and Facebook by the same name, just Bethany Blanton. Instagram, Snapchat, all that good stuff. I am kind of off and on because I am now active duty Air Force. So life is thrown a lot my way in a lot of good ways, but it leaves a little less time for Star Wars, sadly. But thanks for having me on, guys. This is a lot of fun. It was nice to dig back into the Star Wars.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you had time to join us. So thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Always good to get to talk with Bethany and you guys, of course. You know me, I'm always at a logical rogue too on everything and anything. soon to hopefully be on Xbox as well. Like, got some new stuff going with Nate, going to get his old Xbox. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be on new systems again. So hopefully I'll be able to play with a lot more people than I'm currently getting to do on my PlayStation 4. You know, I podcast on Star Wars Report, Star Wars Beyond the Films, and the Padawan Perspective with my daughter and Barrett Lawton and his son, Pharaoh, and as well as my son, Gavin, when he comes down. And Jaina, who insists on coming in to shows and applying her special little interrupting skills. But I'm working on that. I've got her now at the end of the show. I found out if I do a one-on-one with the five-year-old, it records a heck of a lot better. Yeah. Luckily, Barrett, though, he's a master editor. He takes all the really awkward silences that a six-year-old can provide and cuts them out, so you don't really know what's going on. But yeah, it's fun for Dad to put that show together as well.
That's great. And Jason, how can people find the Wampas Lair? I mean, you don't have to give all the credentials, but
well, I'll try to do you justice here, Carl. You can always, of course, get in touch with the Wampas Lair over on Facebook, facebook.com/Wampas Lair Podcast. That's our home base, our echo base. You can also tweet us at Wampas Lair, email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com, and of course, hit up Wampas Lair and Star Wars Support up on Patreon. If you want to support us there.
Yeah, so thank you all of you for taking the time to be on this. And yeah, be sure to, you know, check out Wampas Lair, check out Star Wars Report, Star Wars Beyond the Films, all this wonderful content that the Star Wars Report network as a whole is putting out. I was so glad to have all of you on here. So on behalf of Riley, Jason, Mark, Bethany, I'm Carl. Thank you for joining us in this special episode of the Wampas Lair / Star Wars Report podcast. We'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.